Hello everyone and welcome back to the MTG Novels Project. The MTG Novels Project is available both on YouTube and as a podcast version. Check the description for details. A legal note, this is an unofficial audiobook which original content belonged to Wizards of the Coast. This content is covered under the 2017 Wizards of the Coast fan content policy. Listener discretion is advised. Today we'll continue with Chapter 7 of Planeswalker. Wake up! Words and jostling ended Zancha's sleep, so thoroughly that for a heartbeat she neither knew where she was nor what she'd been dreaming. In short order she recognized Rat and the Streamscythe Grove where she'd fallen asleep, both awash in morning light, but the dream remained lost. She hadn't intended to fall deeply asleep, and was angry with herself for that error, and surprised to find Rat clinging to her forearm. He retreated when she glowered. You had a nightmare. Images shook out of Zancha's memory. The dab world of insect artifacts. Her last beating at Phyrexian hands. Urza hurling fire and sorcery to rescue her. Those were moments of her life that Zancha would rather not dream about. Between them and anger, she was in a foul mood. You didn't take advantage, she demanded. Rat answered, I considered it, without hesitation. All night I considered it. But I'm a long way from anywhere. I've got a chain between my feet, and even though you may be stronger than me and have that thing that makes us fly, you're still a boy. You need someone to take care of you. Me? I need someone to take care of me. For all the reasons she could think of to find herself in possession of a slave, that was the last she expected. What about your word? He shrugged. I've had a night to think about it. When I woke up, at first I thought you were pretending to be asleep, waiting for me to run. But if I were going to run, walk. Rat rattled the chain. I'd have to make you sure you couldn't catch me again. What were you going to do? Strangle me? Bash my head? Another shrug. I didn't get that far. You started having your nightmare. It looked like a bad one, so I woke you. You don't believe that nonsense about dreams and your soul? No. Zancha knew little about the Strata's belief, except that they are violently intolerant to everybody else's belief. Besides, Urza had said that she'd lost her soul in the vats. Then why are you so cross-grained? I'm still here, and you're not dreaming a miserable dream. Zancha strapped herself upright. Assessor's basket was where she'd left it, exactly as she left it. Not a crumb unaccounted for. She sapped out another meal and tossed Rat a warning along with his bread. I don't need anyone to take care of me. Don't want it neither. When we get to the college, your name becomes Mishra, and Urso is the one that needs help. Rat grunted. Zancha expected something more, but it seemed that he discovered the virtue of silence and obedience at last, until she told him to sit beside her. There's no other way, he asked, turning pale. Can't we walk? Even with this chain? I'd rather walk. Zancha shook her head, and Rat bolted for the bushes. After trying unsuccessfully to turn himself inside out and wasting his breaths, Rat called back to her side. I'm ready now. I've never fallen from the sky, Rat. Never came close. You're safer than you'd be in a wagon or walking on your own 2 feet. Can't help it, Rat began, then froze completely as Zancha yawned and the sphere spread from her open mouth. He started for the bushing again, knowing that his gut was empty and that she'd be the one who'd be vomiting if she had to bite us off the sphere before it was finished. Zancha grabbed the back of Rat's neck and held his head to her lap till the sphere was rising. The worst is over. Sit up. Don't think so much. There's always something to see. Watch the clouds. The ground. The ground was the wrong word. Cursing feebly, Rat clung to her for dear life. If he couldn't relax, it was going to be a painful journey for both of them. Zancha tried sympathy. Talk to me, Rat. Tell him what you're so afraid of. Put your fear into words. But it couldn't be reassured. So Zancha tried a less gentle approach. Freeing one arm, she set the sphere tumbling, then yelled louder than his moans. I said, talk to me, Rat. You're giving into fear, Rat. She thought of her feet touching the ground, and the sphere plummeted. She thought of playing among the clouds, and the sphere rebounded at a truly dizzying speed. You haven't begun to know fear. Now tell me, what are you afraid of? Rat screamed. It's wrong. It's all wrong. I can feel the sky watching me, waiting for a chance to throw me down. He was sobbing, but his death grip loosened as soon as the words were out of his mouth. Sancha thumped Rabsan between the shoulders. I won't let this guy have you. Doesn't matter. It knows I'm here. Knows I don't belong. It's waiting. She thumped it again. Rat's complaint was too much like her own in the early days, when Urza would drag her between worlds. Urza had the planeswalker spark. The fathomless stuff between the multiverse, countless world planes, bent to his will. Sanja had been and remained an unwelcome interloper. The instant the between worlds furled around her, she could hear the vast multiverse suck in its breath, preparing to spit her out. The planeswalker spark was something a mind either had or didn't have. Sanja didn't have it. Urza couldn't share his. The Sith was the only stopgap that he'd ever to devise. It didn't leave Sancha feeling any less like an interloper, but it did give promise that she'd be alive when the multiverse spat her out. She'd ask Urza to implant a cyst in Rath's belly, in Mitra's belly. But until then, there's nothing she could do except keep him talking. The sky above Efu and Pinkar wasn't nearly as hostile as the worlds between. There's a chance he'd talk himself out of his fears. She nudged him into telling another of his life stories. The details differed from the second tale he told in Assessor's wagon, but the overall spirit hadn't changed. When he came to the part where he found religious notions written in blood on the walls of his family home, the intensity of his feelings forced Rat to sit straight and speak in a firm, steady voice. If Shraddha are men of Avrohir, then I spit on Avrohir. Better to be damned than live in the Shraddha's fist. That was a sort of fatal, futile sentiment that Sancha understood. But she was less pleased to hear Rat declare, when your Urza's done with me, I make my way to Pinkar City and join the Red Stripes. They've got our idea. They've got the right idea. Kill the Shraddha. There's no other way. They'd sooner die than admit they're wrong. So let them die. There are Phyrexians among the Red Stripes, Sancha warned. They're a much worse enemy than any Shraddha. They're not my enemy. Not if they're fighting the Shraddha. Misa may have thought the same thing, but it's not so simple. Flesh cannot trust them, because Phyrexian will never see Flesh as anything but a mistake to be erased. Rat watched her quietly. Flesh? We're Flesh, you and I. Sancha pinched the skin in her arm. But Phyrexians aren't. They're artifact, like Urza's during the Brothers' War, only. Phyrexians aren't artifacts. Their flesh has been replaced with other things, mostly metal, in order to the Ineffable's plan. Their blood has been replaced with glistening oil. So it should be. Blood cannot trust Phyrexians, because blood is a mistake. His eyes narrowed. They studied a place far beyond Sancha's shoulder. Urza talked about thinking, but he rarely did it. Urza either solved his problems instantly without thinking, or he sank to the mire of obsession. Rat was changing his mind when he thought. Sancha found the process unnerving to watch. She spoke quickly to conceal her own discomfort. Flesh, blood, meat. What does it matter? Phyrexia is your enemy, Rat. The Brothers' War was just the beginning of what Phyrexia will do to all Dominaria if it can. There are Phyrexians in the Red Stripes, and you'd be wiser, far wiser, to join the Shraddha in the fight against them. It's just, Rat was thinking even as he talked, his mind changed again and he met Sancha's eyes with an almost physical force. You said you smelled Phyrexian's blood's Red Stripes. My nose is as good as my eyes, and I didn't smell anything at all. You said Flesh can't trust them, but everybody was Flesh, even Tukta and Garv. On top of all, your talk about me pretending to be Mitra for someone you call Urza. Something's not true here. Do you think I'm lying? Sancha was genuinely curious. What you smell back in Midran, it scared you because it was Phyrexian, not because it was Red Stripe. So I guess you're telling the truth, but not all of it. Maybe we're both Flesh, Sancha, but Avrohir's truth, you're not my sort of flesh. I bleed, Sancha asserted, and to prove the point she drew a knife from her boot and slashed a fingertip. It was a deep cut, deeper than she intended. Bright red blood flowed in a steady stream from finger to palm, from palm over wrist, where it began to stain her sleeve. Rat grimaced. That wasn't necessary, he said, pointedly looking beyond the sphere, the first time he'd done that. Eventually, a person would face fears, provided the alternate was worse. You'd know where to cut yourself. Sancho held the knife hilt where Vat would see it. He turned away. You were thinking murder not long ago, she reminded him. Bash me so you could escape. Vat shook his head. Not even close. When my family left Pinkar City, my father learned to slaughter and butcher meat each fall. But I never could. I always ran away. Even last year. He shrank a little as if he'd lost a bit of himself by that admission. Sancho returned to Knight for her boots. You believe me? She asked before sticking her bloody finger in her mouth. I can't believe you, even if you're telling the truth. Urza the Artificer, Mishra, Smelling Fractions, this thing. He flung his hand to the side, struck the sphere, and recoiled. You're too strange. You look like a boy, but you talk. You don't talk like anybody I've ever heard before, Zansha. It's not that you sound foreign, but you're Nafefund. You say you're an artifact. You say you're not an artifact and not a Phyrexian. I don't know what to believe. Whose side are you on? Urza's side. Against Phyrexia. Her finger hand stopped bleeding. She put it back in her mouth. Urza's no hero. Not to me. What he did 3,400 years ago, his god should still be punished for him for that. You throw a lot of choices in front of me. All of them bad. One way or another, I don't know what to think. You think too much. Yeah, I hear that all the time. Rat's voice trailed off. Whoever had shouted him last had probably killed him, but had been killed by the Shrada. All the time had become history for him. History and grief. Zansha left him alone. Her figure was pale and wrinkled. At least it had stopped bleeding. They'd been soaring due west in a gentle grasp of drift from wind. Clouds were forming to the north, and so the clouds were scattered, fluffy and white. But north of Ifu and Pakar was an endless sea, where huge storms were common and sudden. Sancha used her hands to pull the sphere in a southwesterly course, and set it rising in search of stronger winds. Belatedly, she realized that she had Rat's undying, undivided attention. How do you do that? He asked. Magic? Are you a sorcerer? Would that explain everything? No. No? No. I don't know how I do it. I don't know how I walk either, or how the food I eat keeps me alive. But it does. One day, Urza handed me something. He said it was a cyst. And he said swallow it. Since it came from Urza, it was probably an artifact. I didn't know for sure, because I never asked. I know how to use it. I don't need to know more. And neither were you. Sorry I asked. I'm just trying to think my way out of this. You think too much. She hadn't meant to repeat the comment that had jabbed his memory. But before she could berate herself, Rat shot back. I'm supposed to be Mishra, aren't I? He changed his mind again. It was possible that a man, a true flesh and blood man, not like Urza, couldn't think too much. The sphere found stronger winds and slewed sideways? Never heard that before. The sphere found stronger winds and slewed sideways. Zansha needed full concentration to stop the tumbling. Rat curled up against her with his head between his knees. To the north, clouds billowed as she watched. It was unlikely that they could outrun the brewing storm, but they could cover a lot of territory before she had to get them to shelter. There would, however, be a price. It's going to be fast and a little bumpy while we ride the wind streams. You ready? Taking Rat's groan for assent, Sancha angled her hand west of the southwest, and the sphere leapt as if it had been shot from a giant's bow. If she'd been alone, Sancha would have pressed both hands against the sphere's inner curve and let the wind rush past her. She figured Rat wasn't quite ready for such exhilaration and kept her guiding hand sheltered in her lap. The northern horizon became a white mountain range, whose highest peak was beginning to spread and flatten against invisible ceiling. Someone's going to get wild weather tonight, Zancha said to her unresponsive companion. Maybe not us, but someone's going to be begging Avahir's mercy. She guided the sphere higher. Beneath them, the ground resembled one of Ursa's tabletops, even flatter and emptier. A few roads, like rusty wire, were spring-green fields, a palisaded villages, about 10 homesteads tucked in a stream bend. Zanja considered her promise to replace Rat's rags and implicitly to have his feathers removed. If she had set the sphere down, the storm might keep coming down until tomorrow. If she kept the sphere cuddling, they'd cut a half day or more of the journey. And by amount of the snow rising from the village, the inhabitants were burning their fields. Hardly a good time for strangers to show up asking for favors. Zanja swiveled her hand south of southwest, and Afair bounced into a new attack. Wait! Rat showed at Zanka's ashes. Wait, that's our village. Can't you see? It's on fire. She looked again. Rats were right. Village were in burnings. Roofs were. All the more reason to stay on the south by southwest course, away from trouble. Zanja, it's a strata. It's gotta be. Red Strikes came looking for bribes, but don't destroy the villages. We can't just leave. You can't. People are dying down there. I'm not a sorcerer, Rat. I'm not Urza. There's nothing I can do except get myself and you killed. We can't turn our backs. We're no better than the Strata. No better than the Phyrexians if we do that. Rat had a real knack for getting under Azantia's skin. A dangerous mixture of arrogance and charm. Just like the real Misha. Zanja was about to disillusion her companion when a revelation that she was Phyrexian when he heaved himself towards the burning village. The sphere wasn't Rat's to command. It held to Urza's chosen course, as it must have known it would. Rat didn't seem the sort who'd sacrifice himself to prove a point. But he set the spear tumbling. Everything was knees, elbows, food, and a sword before Zanja got them sorted out. Don't you ever do that again. Rat accepted the challenge. This time, Zanja split his upper lip and planted his knee on his groin before she started the sphere. We're going home to Urza. He's got the power to settle this. Too damn late. People are dying down there. Rat flung himself, but Zanja was ready this time, and the sphere scarcely bounced. I'll drop you if you don't settle yourself. Then drop me. You'll die. I'd rather be dead on the ground than alive up here. Rat grabbed the scabbarded sword, with his full weight behind a hilt, plunged it through the sphere. Zanja reeled from the impact. She had known the damage to the sphere meant sharp pain, radiating from the cyst in her gut. She could have lived another 3,000 years without that particular bit of knowledge. She cocked her fist for a punch that would shatter Rat's jaw. Go ahead, he snarled defiantly. Tell your precious Urza that you killed his brother a second time. Zanja lowered her hand. Maybe she was wrong about his willingness to sacrifice himself. But then they were drifting away from the village, and nothing but Zanja would put them in a course for the flames. The closer they got, the clearer it was that Rat had been right. The North Wind brought screams of pain and terror. Born folk were dying. When they were several hundred paces from the wood palisade, a young woman ran through the broken gate, her hair and hems billowing behind her, a sword-wielding thug in pursuit. Woman and thug both stopped short when they saw the two strangers hovering in midair. Waste not, want not, Zanja muttered. She thought, collision, and now. The cyst in her stomach blew fire strikes, but the sphere plunged like a swooping hawk. It collapsed the instant it touched the gate mouth thug, leaving Zanja to strike with sufficient force to knock him unconscious. She bowed to her feet and crushed the now defenseless man's skull with her boot heel, deliberately splashing Rat with gore. If he'd wanted death, she'd show him death. The village women screamed and kept running. Zanja seized the sword from the tangled bodies and spilled baskets. All right, she thrust it before Rat. When he didn't take it up, she poked him hard. This is what you wanted. Go ahead, go in there and save them. I can't use the sword. I don't know how. Zanja angled the sword, preparing the clown with a hit. You think too much. Rat got to his feet and stumbled over his chains. He stared at the iron links as if they hadn't seen them before. Whatever nonsense he'd been thinking, he hadn't remembered his feathers. I can't. You'll have to. She shook her head slowly. I told you, I'm no damn sorcerer, no damn warrior. This is your idiot's fight, your fight. So you choose, them or me. It was the same ominous otherworldly tones than she had used with Garv and Tukta. She cocked the sword a second time. Rat grabbed the hilt. He couldn't run, so he skipped and hopped towards the gate. "Lose the scabbard," Zadja shouted after him, then muttered, flexing curses as Rat stumbled through the gate, brandishing a scabbarded sword. Rat was a fool, and fools deserved whatever harm befell them. But Zadja's hour faded as soon as her nemesis was out of sight. She reached into her belt pouch and figured a few of the smallest, blackest coins. Then, with them clutched loosely in her hand, she yawned out Urza's armor and followed Rat into the besieged village. Not being a sorcerer wasn't quite the same as not having any sorcerer's tricks in her arsenal, and not being a warrior was a statement of preference, not experience. There weren't many weapons Zamsha didn't know how to use or evade. On other worlds, she routinely carried several of them, but not in Dominaria. She'd given her word. "I know your temper," Urza had said when they arrived, "but this is home, my home. My traveling years are over. I'm never leaving Dominaria, and I don't want you starting brawls and drawing attention to yourself, or me. Promise me you'll stay out of trouble. Promise me you'll walk away rather than start a fight." "Waste not want that. I did not start this, Urza. Truly, I did not." A gutted corpse lay one step within the gate, but it wasn't Rat's. Sancha leaned over, a man bearing a bloody knife running over a burning cauldron on her left. She lifted a coin into her throwing hand, then stayed her arm as a second similarly armed man burst out of the cottage. Villagers or threatened thugs? One was chasing the other. Were they both fleeing or looking for more victims? Zancha couldn't tell by their clothes or manner. Few things were more frustrating or dangerous than barging in a brawl among strangers. After cursing Rat to the seventh sphere of Phyrexia, she entered the college the men had abandoned. The one room dwelling was filled with smoke. Sancha called Rat's name and got no answer. Back on the village's single street, she headed for the largest building she could see, and had taken about 10 strides when an arrow struck her shoulder. Urza's armor was as good as granite when it came to arrows. The shaft splintered, the arrowhead slipped harmlessly down her back. In one smooth moment, Sancha spun around and hurled a small black coin at the fleeing archer. The coin began to grow as soon as it left her hand. It was white hot by the time it struck the archer's neck. He was dead before he hit the ground, with thick, greenish black fumes rising from the fatal wound. A swordsman attacked Zancha next. He knocked her down with the first attack, but was unnerved when she spun up, unbloody. Zancha parried his next strike with her forearm as she closed in to kick him in the stomach, and a second time he crumbled to the jaw. She paused to pick up the sword, then continued down the street, shouting Rat's name, attracting attention. Two more men appeared in front of her. They knew each other and the warrior's trade, giving each other room, exchanging gestures and cryptic commands as they approached. The strategy might have worked if Zancha had been unarmored, or if the sword had been her only weapon. Her aim with the coin wasn't as good as with her offhand weapon. Only one struck its target, but that was enough. The other two exploded when they hit the ground, leaving goat-sized craters in the packed dirt. Her surviving enemy rushed forward, more intent on getting out of the village than fighting. Sancha swung, but he parried well, and had momentum on his side. Sancha slammed backwards into the nearest wall when he shoved her aside. Elsewhere in the village, someone blew three rapid notes on a horn, and a weapon quartet at the other end of the village street dashed for the gate. For a religious fanatic, the Thratas were better disciplined than most armies. Dark suspicion led Zancha to inhale deeply, but beyond the smoke and blood, there was nothing Phyrexian in the air. A straggler ran past. Zancha let him go. This was Rat's fight, not hers, and she didn't know if he'd survive. Ratepe, she used all three syllables of his name. Ratepe, son of Namidia, get yourself out here. A face appeared in the dark, narked doorway of the barn that had been her destination. It belonged to an older man, armed with a pitchfork. He stepped out suddenly over the doorsill. No one here owns that name. There better be. He's mean if he ran. Two more villagers emerged from the barn. A woman clutched her bloodied arm against her side. and a stone-faced toddler who clung to her skirt. "Who are you?" the elder asked, giving the pitchfork a shake, reminding Zancha that she held a bare and bloody sword. "Zancha, Rat and I were nearby." She threw the sword into the dirt beside the last man she killed. He saw the roofs burning. They were still. The survivors made no effort to extinguish the blazes. A village like this was probably had one well and only a handful of buckets. The cottages were partly stone. They could be rebuilt after the fires burnt out. The elder shook his head. Plainly, he didn't believe that anyone had simply been nearby, but Zancha had laid down her weapon. He shouted all's well that lured a few more survivors from their hiding places. Still no Rat. Zancha turned and intended to investigate the other end of the village. The woman who fled, the one who'd seen them descend in despair, was on the street behind her. Her reappearance, alive and unharmed, broke the villagers' shock. Another woman let out a cry that could have been joy or grief. The returning woman cried, "Mother!" But her eyes were locked on Zancha, and his hands were knotted in ward signs against evil. Time to find Rat and get moving. Zancha walked quickly to the end of the village, where the whitewashed temple held the place of honor. The door was held open by a corpse. Given who was fighting in F.R. Pinkar, Zancha supposed she shouldn't have been surprised that the temple had been a charnel house. She counted 10 men, each with his hands bound and his throat slit, lying in a common bloody pool. There were more corpses, similarly bound, all close to the altar, but she'd spotted Rat staring at a wall before she counted them. "We've got to leave." He didn't twitch. The scabbard was gone. The sword blade was dark and glistening in the temporal squealy light. Rat had probably never held a sword before Zancha had made him afraid of her than death. Odds were he'd become a killer, if not a fighter, in the past hour. A man could crack under that kind of strain. Zancha posed him cautiously. "Rat! Retepe!" The wall was covered with bloody words. Zancha could read a score of Dalmarian languages. Most of them long extinct. None of them Efuend. "What does it say?" "Those who defile the Srata will be cleansed in their own blood. Blessed be Avo here, in whose name this has been done." Zancha placed her hand over the sword-gripping hand. Without a word, Rat released the help. "If there are gods," she said slightly, "then thugs like the Srata don't speak for them." She tried to guide Rat towards the door. He resisted, quietly but completely. "Mortals, men who are born and who grow old, saw death in no way Phyrexian Newt could imagine, in ways Urza had forgotten." Zancha had exhausted her mere store of platitudes. "You knew that the Shadow were here, Rat. You must have known what you'd find." "No. I stopped at other villages before I got to Medran. You weren't the first to tell me about the Shraddha. This is their handiwork." "It's not," Rat shucked free. "It's time to leave." Zancha gripped his arm again. Rat was like a serpent, but did not harm her, only because Zancha was a hair's breadth faster in jumping away. She recognized madness on his tear-struck face. "All right, tell me, talk to me. Why isn't this Shraddha handiwork?" "Him." Rat pointed at an isolated corpse slumped in the corner. Between the writing on the wall and the wall between the altar, the man had died because his gut had been slashed open. But he had other wounds, many other wounds, none of which had bled appreciable. Zancha, who fought and sometimes succumbed to her own blood rages, knew at once that this was the man, probably the only man, that Rat had killed. "All right, what about him?" "Look at him. He's not Shraddha." "How do you know?" Zancha asked, willing to believe him. If he had a good answer. "Look at his hands." She nudged them with her foot. The light was bad, but they seemed ordinary enough to her. "What? I see nothing in ordinary." "The hands of God. The Shraddha are Avatir's avengers. They tattooed their hands with Shraddha verses from Avatir's holy book. Maybe he was a new recruit." Rat shook his head fiercely. "It's more than his hands. He's clean-shaven. Then Shraddha never cut their beards." Zatcha ran through her memory. Since she'd arrived in Efren Picard, the only clean-shaved men she'd seen had been Medran, wearing red tunics. And here were the men she'd fought, and the man Rat had killed were beardless. So it's not the Shroud after all. It's Red Stripes pretending to be the Shroud, she asked. And knowing that the Phyrexians had invaded the Red Stripe cadres, Zatcha asked herself another silent question. Had the Phyrexian created their own enemy to bring war and suffering to the obscure corner of Darbnaria? If so, they'd learned considerable subtlety since Gix destined out to sleep upon another world. Rat's head continued to shake. I've seen the Shroud cut through a family like ripe cheese. I saw them draw my uncle's guts out through a hole in his gut. They'd say he'd spilled dog's blood on the book. I know Shrada and Zatcha. This is what they do, except this man isn't and can't be Shrada. Keeping her voice calm, Zatcha said, you said you're gone when the Shrada came through your village. You didn't see anything. It could have been the Red Stripes. Could have, rather good easily. But I saw my uncle get killed, and I saw it before we left Pinkar City, and it was the Shrada. By the book, by a true book, Zatcha. Why would Red Stripes do this? No one but the Shrada support the Shrada. The people here, at home, what was home, the Shrada would come, real Shrada, and they'd tell us what to do, which is most likely give them everything we had, and then some. And they would kill if they didn't get what they wanted, Rat shuddered. My family were strangers, driven out of Pinkar City. But everyone hated the Shroud as much as we did. We all prayed. Zatcha to Ivahir to send us Red Stripe warriors in the cities. The Red Stripes were our protectors. Be careful what to pray for. I guess it sounds like the Red Stripes may have been doing the Shroud's dirty work and leaving behind no witnesses to reveal the truth. Rat had reached a similar conclusion. And if that's true, they're not finished with this place. They're waiting outside. They wouldn't have gone away. Everyone here is dead. You and me too. Unless we can kill them all. It's worse than that, Rat. Somebody's gone. Somebody's running a report back somewhere. To a Phyrexian sleeper. Saying he'd seen a dark-haired youth hovering in a spear. No. She'd killed the thug who'd been seen him in the sphere, but she'd taken off an arrow. Phyrexians might lack imagination, but they had excellent memories. Someone might remember Gix's identical newts, especially since Dominaria was a world Phyrexian coveted above all others. The world of her earliest dreams. Urza was right as usual. She'd lost her temper, and the price could be very high. We've got to leave. Everyone will die. No deader than there be if we never set foot here. But their blood will be on our hands. On my hands. Since you don't have a conscience, I'm not leaving. There's no point in staying. The Red Stripes will come back. We'll kill them. Then we can leave. I told you. There's no point. They'll have sent a runner. This village is doomed. Rat paced noisily. All right, it's doomed. So if we kill the Red Stripes that are still outside the village, you'll take these people one by one to other villages, where they can spread the truth and disappear. By the time the runner lets more Red Stripes here, this place will be empty. It can't be done. You can't be serious. But Rat was, and Zatcha had a conscience. It could be done. First come along, Violet Knight, roaming the fields outside the village with her armor and a sharp knife. Followed by 3 days of burying the dead and another 5 of ferrying frightened survivors to places where they could spread the truth about the Shrada and the Red Stripes, then disappear. But it was done. On the morning of the 10th day, Atherin fetters draped across the defiled altar, they resumed their journey out of the Efonar Pinkar. Thank you for listening to Chapter 7 of Planeswalker. Please like, subscribe, and follow on YouTube and your chosen podcast platform. Thanks for listening.